Hello, and welcome to the Stanley Cup Final Preview Edition of the Breakout Hockey Program. My name is Adam Summers, and as always, I'd like to thank you very much for joining us here on the show. As the intro right there said, we are on the cusp, as I record this on Tuesday night, on the cusp of the Stanley Cup Finals between the Los Angeles Kings and the New Jersey Devils. Certainly not a Stanley Cup Final that I think the vast majority of us would have predicted. If you go all the way back to September or so, when we did the predictions on this show, this was not the Stanley Cup Final that we had. I actually had it as the Chicago Blackhawks and the New York Rangers. Neither of those worked out, obviously, particularly Chicago getting bounced in the first round by Phoenix. The Rangers, at least, made it to Game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals. However, both of these teams, I recall early in the season talking about New Jersey being the type of team that could surprise some people. I certainly didn't think they were going to make the Stanley Cup Finals. And on the LA side, they were actually one of the hot topics in the preseason and going into the season, in that there were a lot of people who were picking them to be a potential Stanley Cup contender. And it's funny because the predictions that everybody made early in the year, which were based obviously off the team they had going into the start of the season, really that team, you know, being coached by Terry Murray, having Jack Johnson on the team, and the makeup of the team considerably different than it is now, with Daryl Sutter behind the bench, with Jeff Carter there, with several young guys like Dwight King, Jordan Nolan, several other guys on the roster. It's that version of the team, which a lot of people, even after the coaching change had been made and the Jeff Carter deal had been made, that version of the team had been pretty much written off coming out of the trade deadline, just as a team that really still, even after having made the moves, couldn't score. There was at one point in the season, I believe Jonathan Quick had lost 9 games that he'd only given up 1 goal in, which is just an insane stat. But lo and behold, you know, a team that scrapes their way in as the 8th seed, and I know some people have said that, well, they're not a real 8th seed because they're too good to be a real 8th seed. Well, they played an 82-game season and had to scrape their way into the playoffs. So, I mean, that's a relatively large sample size. An 8th seed is an 8th seed, and when you look at what they've done, really even more impressive in some ways than I know a lot of people, and I think because of a couple of the guys on this team, a lot of people have compared them to the Edmonton Oilers' 8th seed Cinderella team that made it to the Stanley Cup Finals against the Carolina Hurricanes coming out of the lockout. I would agree that that was more of a Cinderella team, but it's hard to argue that there's ever been a more impressive 8th seed performance than what the LA Kings have done, knocking off the number one seed in the Vancouver Canucks. And then going along and knocking out the number 2 seed in the St. Louis Blues and the number 3 seed in the Phoenix Coyotes. That has never been done before. Undefeated through the first 3 rounds on the road. Hasn't been done too many times, to say the least. Just a very dominant team. But on the flip side, and we'll get into this again, we're not going to do this isn't going to be an overly long show here. So I try to progress through this Stanley Cup Final and into the offseason, as I've mentioned, I think, a few times before. Going to experiment with trying to keep the shows a little bit shorter. Hopefully that will that'll allow me to do a few more shows here and there. But as we get in and break everything down, a lot of people, I think, are forgetting the fact that there are 2 teams in these Stanley Cup Finals, and that the New Jersey Devils are not a pushover. They are... When you look at what happened last year with New Jersey, the whole debacle with John McClain, we discussed it in great detail throughout the season last year. They waited a while to pull the trigger. They fire John McClain. They bring in Jacques Lemaire for part of the season. He comes in and really rights the ship. They go on an incredible run, but come just shy of making the playoffs. But really, you look at what they got out of Ilya Kovalchuk after the coaching change last year. The big question mark was, okay, you're bringing in Pete DeBoer, a guy who had been known to not play an overly or not coach an overly exciting style of hockey in Florida, not overly successful in Florida. And granted, it's hard to judge either of those things because you had a roster that was certainly nowhere near the talent level of the New Jersey Devils roster, but still, you bring in a coach who, while he was very good in junior, not a coach that had really any measure of success as a head coach in the National Hockey League. So you bring him in, as I said, you know, your first, I guess your second full year of Ilya Kovalchuk, but his first full year with a new head coach. You had to think of, from Kovalchuk's perspective, what is he thinking? After he plants on his roots for, well, originally hoped it to be 17 years, but it ends up being 15 years. And over the course of really 12 months, he has three different coaches. You really wondered how he was going to respond to Peter DeBoer after he responded so well to Jacques Lemaire. But lo and behold, it certainly has worked out. I mean, it's hard to, you certainly can never judge the merits of a contract that long, a 15-year contract in year one. It's the tried-and-true example we always trot out, but just look at Rick DiPietro. It's very hard to gauge those deals that early on. But it's hard to argue with it if you're able to take a team that had sort of been on the fringe in terms of New Jersey since they last won the Cup in 2003. And now, a couple years later, you know, after the disaster year of last season, you find yourself in the Stanley Cup Finals. So they're not a pushover. And when we break this down, honestly, I think it's going to be a fascinating series because you have two, I think, very similar teams that in a lot of ways, not exactly, but in a lot of ways play a similar style in that they are very sound defensively. They play with structure, but they also, especially with, and the Devils have been like this all year, the Kings really from maybe the last few weeks of the regular season and obviously through the playoffs. But both teams, while they have that structure both offensively and defensively, they can break games open. You have goaltending, which is obviously on opposite ends of the age spectrum, but a strength for both teams. So it's going to be a fascinating series. We'll get to that in just a minute. Before the show goes too far down the rails, I do have to mention, because if you go back, and I think I would have to go back and look in the archives, but if you go back and if you have any of the shows downloaded, or if you go back to breakouthockey.podomatic.com, if you go and look in the archives, the first few shows that we ever did of this program, I mentioned Donald Fehr being named the executive director of the National Hockey League Players Association, and at the time, sort of, okay, what do we make of that? Should we be afraid? Should we not be afraid? What's, you know, what's the lay of the land? And at the time, I think everybody, understandably so, was concerned. I think some people were more concerned than they needed to be at that point in time. But I think the relative level of calm that I had, and I think that a lot of other people had at the time, was that it seemed very likely that talks were going to begin well in advance of September 15th, 2012, when the collective bargaining agreement, as we now know it, was set to expire. Even through the early part of the season, we all expected, and we talked about it on the show, that right around the All-Star break, bargaining was going to begin, at least formal talks would begin, and we'd be on the road to at least, you know, heavy discussions and maybe even offers being made back and forth. If you fast forward as I record this to May 29th, 2012, and absolutely zero formal discussions have taken place between the two sides. They've exchanged information, a lot of that information in dispute as far as hockey-related revenue, the figures that the league provided to Donald Fehr and the Players Association. There was some dispute over that. That delayed proceedings, certainly. The Players Association's rejection of the realignment plan, which you talked about on this program, that certainly, I'm sure that didn't endear Donald Fehr to Gary Bettman. And granted, Donald Fehr's job is certainly not to endear himself to Gary Bettman. But all that's led to a point to where right now, we are less than 4 months away from the CBA expiring. No formal talks have taken place. And if you read the tea leaves, they are a little bit concerning. We've heard from several people. When I say we've heard, I'm not trying to make it sound like as though I have any grand inside sources on this, but it's just been what's out there that Gary Bettman and the league may be looking at least as an initial offer, which obviously they're not... they're not stupid. They know that, I mean, the initial offer is just what you do to get the ball rolling. There's no way the Players Association would accept this, but that they are looking for a reduction in the players' share of hockey-related revenue to go from 57% as it stands right now under the collective or the current collective bargaining agreement to between 46 and 48% of hockey-related revenue, which, A, there's no way the players will go for that. That's a massive reduction. B, that's lower than any of the – it's lower than either the NFL or NBA were able to get from their respective players' associations this past year in their collective bargaining agreements. So you have that on one side, and you have on the other side the Players Association, basically Donald Fear's brother, who is a special counsel to the Players Association, Stephen Fear, I believe, has basically come out and said that the players that there's no appetite among the players for any salary rollback, any reduction, which, again, when I take my hockey fan hat off, which basically, when I'm wearing my hockey fan hat, I'm just pissed because a large portion of my life revolves around hockey, and particularly the National Hockey League. And I really don't want to go into September, October having no idea if there's going to be NHL hockey again and sort of living through that hell that we all lived through during the 2004-2005 season that wasn't. So from that perspective, I just like, I just get a deal done. I don't care who screws over who. But as somebody who tries his best to be an analyst of the game on some level, or you know, be an observer and try to sort of be as impartial as possible, I don't blame the players at all if they say, enough, we're not going to do this. I mean, from the Players Association perspective, after losing an entire year, they basically buckled and, I mean, the league won. Make no mistake about it. In 2004-2005, with that lockout, the league ended up winning. The players agreed to a salary cap. They agreed to a 24% salary rollback. And yes, you can say, you know, in the aftermath that it worked out very well for the players. But the league won the negotiation. It worked out well for the players because you have owners who just can't help themselves. And basically over the intervening 7 years between the CBA being passed and what we're all facing now, they found a way to circumvent their own system in every way imaginable. You look at burying contracts in the minors. You look at the crazy long-term deals with the zombie years at the end of the contract that basically just artificially lower the cap hit, which, yes, they're all technically legal, but these are all things that circumvent the spirit of the salary cap, and basically everything that the league said that were the main reasons for instituting a salary cap is they all cried poor. So now you've got a situation where the league, and granted, there are teams that are suffering mightily, including one of the two teams that's in the Stanley Cup Finals right now, in terms of from a financial standpoint. But you've got a league that's seen massive growth in the billions of dollars since this collective bargaining agreement came into effect. I mean, it's from a league perspective, it's worked out very well for them. It's worked out very well for the players. But I think it's impossible for Gary Bettman to not look at what's happened in the labor negotiations with the NBA and the NFL and not see dollar signs in his eyes and not see that, hey, we've got a game that's growing. We've got revenues that are constantly increasing. And I see an opening that I can get my owners and by extension myself a bigger slice of the pie. And that'll get me more job security and, you know, everything that goes along with that. But it's very short-sighted. The league seems to think that because the fans came back after the 04-05 lockout that, you know, they won't care if there's a lockout. They'll just idly sit by. But the issue back then, and then we'll get back to the finals, but the issue back then was that the game, for a lot of reasons, in terms of particularly, I think, a lot of it on ice, which, believe me, through the off-season, we're going to talk a lot about the regression of the on-ice product. Who's to blame for that? What's to blame for that? And what can be done? But you go back to maybe the 8 to 10 years leading up to the lockout, the game from an entertainment standpoint had regressed considerably. TV deals weren't very good. I mean, you're on ESPN, but you really weren't as far as any promotion at all. You were stuck on ESPN2, which did not have the television universe that it has now. It basically all amounted to the fact that there wasn't a whole lot for the NHL to lose. You had already whittled your fan base down to the bone as far as the absolute core of people that just weren't going to leave. You were really maybe just starting to develop stars, but you really hadn't developed too many new stars just because the nature of the game, the dead puck era, clutching and grabbing, whatever you want to call it, no offensive stars were really able to emerge for quite a while. So you had all that. So you have a lockout. And yeah, you don't lose a whole lot, but okay, you stayed at a low level. Now, in the last 7 years, I mean, I see it here in Chicago, the number of new hockey fans is insane. And yes, you've got your bandwagon fans, but you also have new hockey fans who, yes, they, for whatever reason, whether it be Sidney Crosby, Alex Ovechkin, you know, here in Chicago, Kane and Taves, whatever, you've got new fans who are hardcore new fans who absolutely love hockey now, but it isn't necessarily something that's ingrained in their life, probably like the vast majority of the people who were the fans, you know, the only fans that were around right before the lockout. As far as these people, yes, they're hardcore and they're obsessive about hockey, but if you piss them off, I'd be willing to believe that there's at least a segment of that new hardcore fan base that they will be so disgusted that they will move on and they will find something else. You have a much bigger TV deal than you've had in the last several years here in the States. The experiment, if you can call it that, of leaving ESPN, obviously it was a little bit shaky when you're on OLN, but as that became Versus, and now that as it's become NBC Sports Network, the whole argument of the NHL needing ESPN has become moot. Yes, would we all like to see the ESPN cover NHL on SportsCenter? Yes, but as hockey fans, I think we've all been trained for long enough to know that, especially here in the States, if you want hockey, you don't need to go to ESPN. There's plenty of other outlets, whether it be NHL Network, NBC Sports Network, if you have an NHL Center Ice, obviously the Internet. So all that, to me, adds up to a league that has more to lose than it realizes it does. My prediction, if I was forced to make one right now, is that as a fan, you're probably better off pretending that December, maybe even Winter Classic, is the scheduled opening day, and you'll probably save yourself a lot of heartache, because it, to me, just everything, you look at the timeline, how they haven't done anything yet, and the lack of urgency, particularly on the league side, and I think from the Players Association side, but to me it all adds up to a negotiation that they're really looking at being able to make sure that the Winter Classic doesn't get canceled. I think that's much more of a concern than making sure that that opening day, you know, is in early October, that preseason games get played in late September. That's my thought on it. We'll talk about that quite a bit throughout the off season, but just wanted to get that in there because it's been eating at me, and I'd be lying if I said that those concerns haven't affected my, I don't know, maybe they've affected my enjoyment of the playoffs a little bit, or certainly my anticipation of the Stanley Cup final, because it's, I don't know, as you're watching each game and you're thinking, okay, there's only four more games till, you know, whatever, NHL Labor Armageddon, you know, maybe we don't have hockey till the 13-14 season. I don't think it's going to go that far, but it certainly creeps into my mind. But in any event, back to the Stanley Cup finals, and the preview of it. To me, like I talked about earlier, it's going to be a very close series. I almost wonder, though, if this is going to be one of those series that, while the games are played very closely, you know, while they're all very close games, you know, 2-1, 3-2, some games going into overtime, you almost wonder, or I almost get the feeling that one of these teams may end up winning the series in a short amount of games, even though none of those games end up being blowouts. Again, I just use the example because, even though it's been a couple years, it's fresh in my mind having attended these games live. You look at the conference finals a couple years ago with the Blackhawks and the Sharks. To me, that was a perfect example of a series that everybody, you know, you look at it now, you look back, oh my God, wow, I mean, the Sharks choked. The Hawks beat them in four straight to go to the Stanley Cup Finals. That's amazing. It's, you know, such an example of, you know, how strong the Hawks team was and, you know, just the Sharks choking again. But if you go back, and if you go back and watch those games or remember that series, that was an incredibly close series, a lot of close games, overtime, you know, whatever, close games, one-goal games. Sharks played very well in that series, so did the Blackhawks. And you almost wonder if this series could have a similar feel. I mean, when I go up and down the lineups, again, there's a lot of similarities. You've got high-end offensive talent on both teams, you know, whether it be, you know, Zach Parise, Ilya Kovalchuk, you know, whether you look at on the LA side, you know, Kopitar, Dustin Brown just having an absolutely incredible playoffs. You look at Carter and Richards sort of being your secondary guys, which really, that probably is the best role for those guys, I think. Particularly Carter, but I think Richards as well. I think that them not having to be the guys to carry the team is probably the best thing that could happen to them. You look at depth. Both teams have gotten scoring, whether it be not just from the second and third line, you know, not just from guys who are very good offensive players, but might not be right at the forefront of everybody's minds. You've had guys like that score, but then you've also had really both teams, fourth lines, different series. A couple series ago with LA, obviously the fourth line for the New Jersey Devils last series was just absolutely ridiculous with Carter, Steven Gionta, and Steve Bernier. Three guys who really coming into the season, I don't think anybody said they were locks to be NHL roster players by any stretch of the imagination. Steven Gionta, kind of, you know, obviously more of an AHL guy than an NHL guy throughout his, you know, young career to this point. Steve Bernier on the verge really of playing himself out of the NHL. Ryan Carter, certainly not an everyday NHL player. And you look at the massive impact that they had in that series against the New York Rangers. And then similarly, you look at the different guys really on the third and fourth line of the LA Kings throughout these playoffs. You look at a guy like Dwight King who came out of nowhere the latter part of this season and into the playoffs to really end up being a force. So both sides have that depth scoring. Goaltending, as we talked about, on both teams, hard to find a whole lot of fault with. Marty Brodeur having the best season he's had in a long time, best playoffs he's had in, you know, half a decade. I mean, is he Marty Brodeur of, you know, 1995? Probably not, but the bad goals or the bad games have certainly been at more of a minimum in this year's playoffs than they had been in the past several years. So you look at Brodeur on one side, you look at Jonathan Quick on the other side, who has been absolutely spectacular through the majority of this year's playoffs. I do wonder, though, when you look at, even though obviously, I mean, they won the series pretty handily over the Phoenix Coyotes in the conference finals, but if you watch those games closely, I think there's a little bit of cause for concern with Jonathan Quick compared to the first two series. Everybody's talked about, and rightfully so, how agile he is, his ability to get from post to post, make sliding saves, all those sorts of things. But there were quite a few moments in that series against Phoenix where, you know, he'd do his patented slide and he sort of would overslide. You know, he's athletic and he was almost too athletic. A lot of times it didn't end up biting him, but there were wide open nets that Phoenix did not necessarily capitalize on. So that, to me, that's, from a goaltending perspective, even more than Marty Brodeur, that's going to be the most interesting thing, is to see if that trend continues or, you know, the obviously longer-term trend of Jonathan Quick being the best goalie in the NHL for the entire regular season and playoffs. It'll be interesting to see which of those things wins out from the LA Kings side. To me, as I look at this series, where it's going to be won, I think, is going to be in the physicality of the D on either side. And I guess maybe rolled into that, maybe even more so, is the ability of each D to absorb physicality. From the New Jersey Devils side, they are going to have just waves of forecheckers coming in. Just the physicality of the, and it's mostly the forwards, but of the LA Kings, the relentlessness of them on the defense of each of their opponents throughout the first three rounds, I think was a huge factor in wearing down D as the series went on. When I look at the New Jersey Devils, their D is massively underrated. I mean, you look at, you look at some of these guys. I mean, Marek Zidlitsky, and a lot of people were, I think, a little bit on the fence as far as that being a good pickup or not, but that has certainly worked out very well. Bryce Salvador, the poster child for that, you know, every year in the Stanley Cup playoffs, you have a guy who comes out of nowhere, really doesn't do a whole lot in the regular season, and then is just a star in the playoffs. You look at a guy like Joel Ward last year, Sean Bergenheim, different positions, but Bryce Salvador has been that guy in the Stanley Cup playoffs this year. Andy Green, you know, big guy. He's probably the one guy on the back end that I'm not worried about as far as being able to absorb physicality. Anton Volchankov, who great shot blocking, but And great penalty killer. I mean, he kills more time on the penalty on the PK than anybody else, but can't play the number of 5-on-5 minutes that he was able to before. Henrik Tillander possibly coming back. I mean, it's a solid D, and it's a D that doesn't necessarily get the respect that it deserves. But I really worry about their ability to hold up just against the relentlessness of the Kings forwards. Shift after shift, game after game, hit after hit. You have to think that that's going to... It's going to play a factor with everything else being equal, which I pretty much think it is, that could be the thing that that ends up making the difference. So, as you could probably tell by that, I am going to pick the Los Angeles Kings. I'm also going to do that tried and true broadcaster / podcaster thing and say I really wouldn't be all that surprised if the New Jersey Devils were able to pull out this series. And I'm not just saying that. I mean, if this was the New York Rangers, if they had somehow been able to win Game 6 and then win a third consecutive Game 7 to go to the Stanley Cup Finals, I honestly would have picked the Kings in a sweep. I don't think that the Rangers would have had anything left physically, and certainly not the offense to be able to beat the Kings. As far as how many games it's going to take, I waffle back and forth because, to me, it's going to go one of two ways. It's either going to be a four-game sweep, four or five games, but a four-game sweep where every game is close, but every game is pretty much the same, or it's going to go six or seven. And I honestly think that as much as it's a possibility that could be one of those series where it's close games but a short series, I would not be surprised if the New Jersey Devils come out and actually win one of the first two games, even though, I mean, you could say they've got the home ice disadvantage considering the Kings' road record, but I wouldn't be surprised to see the New Jersey Devils get out to an early series lead. And as the series wears on, everything that I talked about, the physicality of the Kings on the Devils' D, that ends up being the difference. So I am going to say... I'll say the Kings in seven. I don't want to be that guy that I always talk about on the show. I don't want to be that guy that just hedges his bets and says whoever's going to win is going to win in six, because that always just feels like a bailout pick to me. It seems just too easy. So I'll say the Kings in seven. I will say it will not be Jonathan Quick as the Conn Smythe Award winner. I'll say it's Dustin Brown, although I'll say that not enough consideration is also being given to Andrei Kopitar as possibly being a Conn Smythe-worthy candidate. But yes, I'll say Dustin Brown. So, in closing, I think it's going to be an awesome Stanley Cup final from an on-ice product. I think that given the four teams that made it into the final, strictly from an on-ice entertainment standpoint, it's by far the best matchup we could have ended up with. I mean, from a TV perspective in the States, the league would have loved to have the Rangers and the Kings. I don't think there's anybody other than the two markets that would have liked to see it be the Rangers and the Coyotes. I think what we ended up with from an on-ice perspective is really the best option. So with that, I certainly hope everybody enjoys it. I'm going to do my best, particularly if it looks like it's going to be a long series, to be back mid-series as there's several multiple day breaks to kind of do a mid-series assessment and kind of maybe be a bit of a windsock and change my pick if it looks pretty ridiculous. I certainly won't do that, but we'll do some analysis of that. And then obviously, like I said, it's my pledge to make sure that we will do a show wrapping up the Stanley Cup Finals and be here periodically throughout the summer, because between free agency, well, really between the draft, free agency, and then, the CBA hell that we hopefully don't go through, find all that very fascinating and would like to be here to do shows for everybody throughout the offseason when a lot of other shows are not around. So that's the plan. Certainly hope the Stanley Cup Finals will be as entertaining as the Memorial Cup if you had a chance to watch the championship game between the London Knights and Shawinigan. Just awesome stuff. So hopefully the Stanley Cup Finals will live up to that standard. Hopefully you enjoy it. If, as I know some of you who are listening, I think on both sides actually of this, it's likely that if you won't be at the games, you certainly have an intense rooting interest in the Stanley Cup Finals. So enjoy if it's one of your two teams in there. Certainly enjoy if you're lucky enough to be at a Stanley Cup Final. It is an absolutely incredible experience that just, if you go, soak every single second of it in and just enjoy it, because it's incredible, and you have no idea when the next time your team will be there. So enjoy it. I know I definitely will, as a bit of a dispassionate observer, and like I said, we'll be back soon. Thanks again for listening, as always, and make sure you do one thing, especially during the Stanley Cup Finals, because it can get pretty exciting. Make sure to please keep it simple.